He'd almost forgotten Burbrook was there. "Mavallet is up in arms about it," Neville continued, ambling along. "Don't know why they can't make paint that washes out of linen." He paused, apparently in deep thought. "Or wool." "Do you like to paint?" Lady Lucinda asked Gregory. "No talent for it," he admitted. "But my brother is an artist of some renown. Two of his paintings hang in the National Gallery."
"Oh, that is marvellous," she exclaimed.
She turned to Miss Watson.
"Did you hear that, Hermione? You must ask Mr. Bridgerton to introduce you to his brother." "I would not wish to inconvenience either, Mr. Bridgerton," she said demurely.
"It would be no inconvenience at all," Gregory said, smiling down at her. "I would be delighted to make the introduction, and Benedict always loves to natter on about art. I am rarely able to follow the conversation, but he seems quite animated."
"You see," Lucy put in, patting Hermione's arm, "you and Mr. Bridgerton have a great deal in common."
Even Gregory thought that was a bit of a stretch, but he did not comment.
"Velvet," Neville suddenly declared.
Three heads swung in his direction.
"I beg your pardon," Lady Lucinda murmured.
"It's the worst," he said, nodding with great vigour. "To get the paint out of, I mean."
Gregory could only see the back of her head, but he could well imagine her blinking as she said,
"You wear velvet while you paint?"
"Well, if it's cold."
"How unique."
Neville's face lit up.
"Do you think so? Oh, I've always wanted to be unique."
"You are," she said.
And Gregory did not hear anything other than reassurance in her voice.
"You most certainly are, Mr. Burbrook."
Neville beamed.
"Unique! I like that. Unique."
He smiled anew, testing the word on his lips.
"Unique. Unique. Unique."
The foursome continued toward the village in amiable silence, punctuated by Gregory's occasional attempts to draw Miss Watson into a conversation. Sometimes he succeeded, but more often than not, it was Lady Lucinda who ended up chatting with him. When she wasn't trying to prod Miss Watson into conversation, that was. And the whole time, Neville chatted on, mostly carrying on a conversation with himself, mostly about his newfound uniqueness. At last the familiar buildings of the village came into view. Neville declared himself uniquely famished, whatever that meant. So Gregory steered the group to the White Hart, a local inn that served simple but always delicious fare.
"We should have a picnic," Lady Lucinda suggested. "Wouldn't that be marvellous?"
"Oh, capital idea," Neville exclaimed,
gazing at her as if she were a goddess. Gregory was a little startled by the fervour of his expression, but Lady Lucinda seemed not to notice.
"What is your opinion, Miss Watson?"
Gregory asked, but the lady in question was lost in thought, her eyes unfocused even as they remained fixed on a painting on the wall.
"Miss Watson?" he repeated,
and then, when he finally had her attention, he said, "Would you care to take a picnic?"
"Oh, yes, that would be lovely."
And then she went back to staring off into space, her perfect lips curved into a wistful, almost longing expression. Gregory nodded, tamping down his disappointment, and set out making arrangements. The innkeeper, who knew his family well, gave him two clean bedsheets to lay upon the grass, and promised to bring out a hamper of food when it was ready.
"Excellent work, Mr. Bridgerton," Lady Lucinda said. "Don't you agree, Hermione?"
"Yes, of course."
"Hope he brings pie," Neville said as he held the door open for the ladies. "I can always eat pie."
Gregory tucked Miss Watson's hand in the crook of his arm before she could escape.
"I asked for a selection of foods," he said quietly to her. "I hope there is something that meets your cravings."
She looked up at him, and he felt it again,
the air swooshing from his body as he lost himself in her eyes. And he knew she felt it too. She had to. How could she not, when he felt as if his own legs might give out beneath him?
"I'm sure that would be delightful," she said.
"Are you in possession of a sweet tooth?"
"I am," she admitted.
"Then you're in luck," Gregory told her. "Mr. Gladish has promised to include some of his wife's gooseberry pie, which is quite famous in this district."
"Pie?"
Neville visibly perked up. He turned to Lady Lucinda.
Did he say we were getting pie?
I believe he did, she replied.
Neville sighed with pleasure. Do you like pie, Lady Lucinda?
The barest hint of exasperation washed over her features as she asked, What sort of pie, Mr. Bearbrook?
Oh, any pie. Sweet, savoury, fruit, meat.
Well, she cleared her throat, glancing about as if the buildings and trees might offer some guidance.
I suppose I like most pies.
It was in that minute that Gregory was quite certain Neville had fallen in love.
Poor Lady Lucinda.
They walked across the main thoroughfare to a grassy field, and Gregory swept open the sheets, laying them flat upon the ground. Lady Lucinda, clever girl that she was, sat first, then patted a spot for Neville that would guarantee that Gregory and Miss Watson would be forced to share the other patch of cloth. And then Gregory set about winning her heart. Chapter 4, in which our heroine offers advice, our hero takes it, and everyone eats too much pie. He was going about it all wrong. Lucy glanced over Mr. Burbrook's shoulder, trying not to frown. Mr. Bridgerton was making a valiant attempt to win Hermione's favour, and Lucy had to admit that under normal circumstances, with a different female, he would have succeeded handily. Lucy thought of the many girls she knew from school. Any one of them would be head over heels in love with him by now. Every one of them, as a matter of fact. But not Hermione. He was trying too hard, being too attentive, too focused, too in love, quite frankly, or at least too infatuated. Mr. Bridgerton was charming, and he was handsome, and obviously quite intelligent as well, but Hermione had seen all this before. Lucy could not even begin to count the number of gentlemen who had pursued her friend in much the same manner. Some were witty, some were earnest. They gave flowers, poetry, candy. One even brought Hermione a poppy, instantly refused by Hermione's mother, who had informed the poor gentleman that the natural habitat of dogs did not include Aubusson carpets, porcelain from the Orient, or herself. But underneath, they were all the same. They hung on her every word, they gazed at her as if she were a Greek goddess come down to earth, and they fell over each other in an attempt to offer the cleverest, most romantic compliments ever to rain down upon her pretty ears. And they never seemed to understand how completely unoriginal they all were. If Mr. Bridgerton truly wished to pique Hermione's interest, he was going to need to do something different.
"More gooseberry pie, Lady Lucinda?"
Mr. Burbrook asked.
"Yes, please,"
Lucy murmured, if only to keep him busy with the slicing, as she pondered what to do next. She really didn't want Hermione to throw her life away on Mr. Edmonds, and truly, Mr. Bridgerton was perfect. He just needed a little help.
"Oh, look," Lucy exclaimed. "Hermione doesn't have any pie."
"No pie?" Mr. Burbrook gasped. Lucy batted her eyelashes at him, not a mannerism with which she had much practice or skill.
"Would you be so kind as to serve her?"
As Mr. Burbrook nodded, Lucy stood up.
"I believe I will stretch my legs," she announced. "There are lovely flowers on the far side of the field. Mr. Bridgerton, do you know anything about the local flora?"
He looked up, surprised by her question.
"A bit."
But he didn't move. Hermione was busy assuring Mr. Burbrook that she adored gooseberry pie. So Lucy took advantage of the moment and jerked her head toward the flowers, giving Mr. Bridgerton the sort of urgent look that generally meant, "Come with me, now." For a moment he appeared to be puzzled, but he quickly recovered and rose to his feet.
"Will you allow me to tell you a bit about the scenery, Lady Lucinda?"
"That would be marvellous," she said, perhaps a touch too enthusiastically. Hermione was staring at her with patent suspicion, but Lucy knew that she would not offer to join them. To do so would encourage Mr. Bridgerton to believe she desired his company. So Hermione would be left with Mr. Burbrook and the pie. Lucy shrugged. It was only fair.
"That one, I believe, is a daisy," Mr. Bridgerton said once they'd crossed the field. "And that stalky blue one. Actually, I don't know what it's called."
"Delphinium," Lucy said briskly. "And you must know that I did not summon you to speak of flowers."
"I had an inkling,"
she decided to ignore his tone. "I wish to give you some advice."
"Really?" he drawled, except it wasn't a question.
"Really?
And what might your advice be?"
There was really no way to make it sound any better than it was, so she looked him in the eye and said, "You're going about this all wrong."
"I beg your pardon?" he said stiffly.
Lucy stifled a groan. Now she pricked his pride, and he would surely be insufferable. "If you want to win Hermione," she said, "you have to do something different." Mr. Bridgerton stared down at her with an expression that almost bordered on contempt.
"I am well able to conduct my own courtships."
"I'm sure you are, with other ladies, but Hermione is different." He remained silent, and Lucy knew that she had made her point. He also thought Hermione different, else he wouldn't be making such an effort. "Everyone does what you do," Lucy said, glancing over at the picnic to make sure that neither Hermione nor Mr. Burbrook had got up to join them. "Everyone."
"A gentleman does love to be compared to the flock," Mr. Bridgerton murmured.
Lucy had any number of rejoinders for that, but she kept her mind on the task at hand and said, "You cannot act like the rest of them. You need to set yourself apart."
"And how do you propose I do that?"
She took a breath. He wasn't going to like her answer.
"You must stop being so devoted. Don't treat her like a princess. In fact, you should probably leave her alone for a few days."
His expression turned to distrust.
"And allow all the other gentlemen to rush in."
"They will rush in anyway," she said in a matter-of-fact voice. "There is nothing you can do about that."
"Lovely."
Lucy plodded on.
"If you withdraw, Hermione will be curious as to the reason why."
Mr. Bridgerton looked dubious, so she continued with,
"Do not worry. She will know that you're interested. Heavens, after today, she'd have to be an idiot not to."
He scowled at that, and Lucy herself couldn't quite believe she was speaking so frankly to a man she barely knew. But desperate times surely called for desperate measures, or desperate speech.
"She will know, I promise you. Hermione is very intelligent, not that anyone seems to notice. Most men can't see beyond her face."
"I would like to know her mind," he said softly.
Something in his tone hit Lucy squarely in the chest. She looked up, right into his eyes, and she had the strangest sense that she was somewhere else, and he was somewhere else, and the world was dropping away around them. He was different from the other gentlemen she'd met. She wasn't sure how exactly, except that there was something more to him, something different, something that made her ache deep in her chest, and for a moment she thought she might cry. But she didn't, because really she couldn't, and she wasn't that sort of female anyway. She didn't wish to be, and she certainly did not cry when she did not know the reason for it.
"Lady Lucinda?"
She'd stayed silent too long. It was unlike her, and
"she will not wish to allow you to," she blurted out.
"No, Hermione, I mean, but you can—" She cleared her throat, blinked, regained her focus, and then planted her eyes firmly on the small patch of daisies sparkling in the sun.
"You can convince her otherwise," she continued. "I'm sure that you can, if you're patient, and you are true."
He didn't say anything right away. There was nothing but the faint whistle of the breeze, and then, quietly, he asked, "Why are you helping me?" Lucy turned back to him, and was relieved that this time the earth remained firmly fixed beneath her feet. She was herself again, risk, no nonsense, and practical to a fault. And he was just another gentleman vying for Hermione's hand. All was normal.
"It's you or Mr. Edmonds," she said.
"Is that his name?" he murmured.
"He is her father's secretary," she explained. "He's not a bad man, and I don't think he's only after her money, but any fool could see that you are the better match."
Mr. Bridgerton cocked his head to the side. "Why, I wonder, does it sound as if you've just called Miss Watson a fool?"
Lucy turned to him with steel in her eyes.
"Do not ever question my devotion to Hermione. I could not—"
She shot a quick glance at Hermione to make sure she wasn't looking,
before she lowered her voice and continued, "I could not love her better if she were my blood sister."
To his credit, Mr. Bridgerton gave her a respectful nod and said, "I did you a disservice. My apologies."
Lucy swallowed uncomfortably as she acknowledged his words. He looked as if he meant them, which went a long way towards mollifying her.
"Hermione means the world to me," she said. She thought about the school holidays she had spent with the Watson family, and she thought about the lonely visits home. Her returns had never seemed to coincide with those of her brother, and Fensworth Abbey was a cold and forbidding place with only her uncle for company. Robert Abernathy had always done his duty by his two charges, but he was rather cold and forbidding as well. Home meant long walks alone, endless reading alone, even meals alone, as Uncle Robert had never shown any interest in dining with her. When he had informed Lucy that she would be attending Miss Moss's, her initial impulse had been to throw her arms around him and gush, "Thank you, thank you, thank you!" Except she had never hugged him before, not in the 7 years he'd been her guardian. And besides that, he had been seated behind his desk, and had already returned his attention to the papers in front of him. Lucy had been dismissed. When she arrived at school, she had thrown herself into her new life as a student, and she had adored every moment. It was so marvellous just to have people to talk to. Her brother Richard had left for Eton at the age of 10, even before their father had died, and she had been wandering the halls of the Abbey for nearly a decade with no one but her officious governess for company. At school, people liked her. That had been the best part of all. At home, she was nothing more than an afterthought, but at Miss Moss's school for exceptional young ladies, the other students sought her company. They asked her questions and actually waited to hear her answer. Lucy might not have been the queen bee of the school, but she had felt that she belonged, and that she had mattered. She and Hermione had been assigned to share a room that first year at Miss Moss's, and their friendship had been almost instant. By nightfall that first day, the two were laughing and chattering as if they'd known each other all of their lives. Hermione made her feel better somehow. Not just their friendship, but the knowledge of their friendship. Lucy liked being someone's best friend. She liked having one too, of course, but she really liked knowing that in all the world there was someone who liked her best. It made her feel confident. Comfortable. It was rather like Mr. Bridgerton and what he'd said about his family, actually. She knew she could count on Hermione, and Hermione knew the same was true of her. And Lucy wasn't sure that there was anyone else in the world she could say that of. Her brother, she supposed. Richard would always come to her aid if she needed him. But they saw each other so rarely these days. It was a pity, really. They'd been quite close when they were small. Shut away at Fensworth Abbey, there was rarely anyone else with whom to play, and so they had no choice but to turn to each other. Luckily, they got along, more often than not. She forced her mind back to the present, and turned to Mr. Bridgerton. He was standing quite still, regarding her with an expression of polite curiosity, and Lucy had the strangest sense that if she told him everything about Hermione and Richard and Fensworth Abbey and how lovely it had been to leave for school, he would have understood. It seemed impossible that he could, coming from such a large and famously close family. He couldn't possibly know what it was to be lonely, to have something to say but no one to say it to. But somehow, it was his eyes, really, suddenly greener than she'd realized, and so focused on her face. She swallowed. Good heavens, what was happening to her that she could not even finish her own thoughts? "I only wish for Hermione's happiness," she managed to get out. "I hope you realize that." He nodded, then flicked his eyes toward the picnic. "Shall we rejoin the others?" he asked. He smiled ruefully. "I do believe Mr. Burbrook has fed Miss Watson 3 pieces of pie." Lucy felt a laugh bubbling within her. "Oh, dear." His tone was charmingly bland as he said, "For the sake of her health, if nothing else, we ought to return." "Will you think about what I said?" Lucy asked, allowing him to place her hand on his arm. He nodded. "I will." She felt herself grip him a little more tightly. "I am right about this.
I promise you that I am. No one knows Hermione better than I, and no one else has watched all those gentlemen try and fail to win her favour.
He turned, and his eyes caught hers. For a moment they stood perfectly still, and Lucy realized that he was assessing her, taking her measure in a manner that should have been uncomfortable. But it wasn't, and that was the oddest thing. He was staring at her as if he could see down to her very soul, and it didn't feel the least bit awkward. In fact, it felt, oddly, nice.
"I will be honored to accept your advice regarding Miss Watson," he said, turning so that they might return to the picnic spot. "And I thank you for offering to help me win her."
Thank you, Lucy stammered, because really, hadn't that been her intention?
But then she realized that she no longer felt quite so nice.
Gregory followed Lady Lucinda's directives to the letter. That evening, he did not approach Miss Watson in the drawing-room where the guests had assembled before supper. When they removed themselves to the dining-room, he made no attempt to interfere with the social order and have his seat switched so that he might sit next to her. And once the gentlemen had returned from their port and joined the ladies in the conservatory for a piano recital, he took his seat at the rear, even though she and Lady Lucinda were standing quite alone, and it would have been easy, expected even, for him to pause and murmur his greetings as he passed by. But no, he had committed himself to this possibly ill-advised scheme, and so the back of the room it was. He watched as Miss Watson found a seat 3 rows ahead, then settled into his chair, finally allowing himself the indulgence of gazing upon the back of her neck, which would have been a perfectly fulfilling pastime were he not completely unable to think of anything other than her absolute lack of interest in him. Truly, he could have grown 2 heads and a tail, and he would have received nothing more than the polite half-smile she seemed to give everyone, if that. It was not the sort of reaction Gregory was used to receiving from women. He did not expect universal adulation, but really, when he did make an effort, he usually saw better results than this. And it was damned irritating, actually. And so he watched the 2 women, willing them to turn, to squirm, to do something to indicate that they were cognizant of his presence. Finally, after 3 concertos and a fugue, Lady Lucinda slowly twisted in her seat. He could easily imagine her thoughts. Slowly, slowly, act as if you're glancing at the door to see if someone came in. Flick your eyes ever so slightly at Mr. Bridgerton.
He lifted his glass in salute.
She gasped, or at least he hoped she did, and turned quickly around.
He smiled. He probably shouldn't take such joy in her distress, but truly it was the only bright spot in the evening thus far. As for Miss Watson, if she could feel the heat of his stare, she gave no indication. Gregory would have liked to have thought that she was studiously ignoring him. That at least might have indicated some sort of awareness. But as he watched her glance idly around the room, dipping her head every so often to whisper something in Lady Lucinda's ear, it became painfully clear that she wasn't ignoring him at all. That would imply that she'd noticed him, but she quite obviously did not. Gregory felt his jaw clench. While he did not doubt the good intentions behind Lady Lucinda's advice, the advice itself had been quite patently dreadful, and with only 5 days remaining to the house party, he had wasted valuable time.
"You look bored."
He turned. His sister-in-law had slipped into the seat next to him and was speaking in a low undertone, so as not to interfere with the performance.
"Quite a blow to my reputation as a hostess," she added dryly.
"Not at all," he murmured. "You are splendid as always." Kate turned forward and was silent for a few moments before saying,
"She's quite pretty."
Gregory did not bother to pretend that he didn't know what she was talking about. Kate was far too clever for that. But that didn't mean he had to encourage the conversation.
"She is," he said simply, keeping his eyes facing front. "My suspicion," said Kate, "is that her heart is otherwise engaged. She has not encouraged any of the gentlemen's attentions, and they have certainly all tried."
Gregory felt his jaw tense.
"I have heard,"
Kate continued, surely aware that she was being a bother, not that that would stop her.
That the same has been true all of this spring. The girl gives no indication that she wishes to make a match.
She fancies her father's secretary, Gregory said. Because really, what was the point of keeping it a secret? Kate had a way of finding everything out, and perhaps she could be of help.
Really?
Her voice came out a bit too loud, and she was forced to murmur apologies to her guests.
Really?
She said again, more quietly.
How do you know?
Gregory opened his mouth to reply, but Kate answered her own question.
Oh, of course, she said. The Lady Lucinda. She would know everything.
Everything, Gregory confirmed dryly. Kate pondered this for a few moments, then stated the obvious.
Her parents cannot be pleased.
I don't know that they're aware.
Oh, my.
Kate sounded sufficiently impressed by this gossipy titbit that Gregory turned to look at her. Sure enough, her eyes were wide and sparkling.
Do try to contain yourself, he said. But it's the most excitement I've had all spring.
He looked her squarely in the face.
You need to find a hobby.
Oh, Gregory, she said, giving him a little nudge with her elbow.
Don't allow love to turn you into such a stuff. You're far too much fun for that. Her parents will never allow her to marry the secretary, and she's not one to elope. You need only to wait her out.
He let out an irritated exhale. Kate patted him comfortingly.
I know you wish to have things done. Your sort is never one for patience.
My sort? She flicked her hand, which he clearly considered enough of an answer.
Truly, Gregory, she said. This is for the best.
That she is in love with someone else?
Stop being so dramatic. I mean that it will give you time to be certain of your feelings for her.
Gregory thought of the gut-punched feeling he got every time he looked at her. Good God, especially at the back of her neck, strange as that seemed. He couldn't imagine he needed time. This was everything he'd ever imagined love to be. Huge, sudden, and utterly exhilarating. And somehow crushing at the same time.
I was surprised you didn't ask to be seated with her at supper, Kate murmured.
Gregory glared at the back of Lady Lucinda's head.
I can arrange it for tomorrow if you wish, Kate offered.
Do. Kate nodded.
Yes, Oh, here we are. The music is ending. Pay attention now and look like we're polite.
He stood to applaud, as did she.
Have you ever not chatted all the way through a music recital?
He asked, keeping his eyes front.
I have a curious aversion to them, she said,
but then her lips curved into a wicked little smile. And a nostalgic sort of a fondness as well.
Really?
Now he was interested.
I don't tell tales, of course, she murmured, quite purposefully not looking at him. But really, have you ever seen me attend the opera?
Gregory felt his brows lift. Clearly there was an opera singer somewhere in his brother's past. Where was his brother, anyway? Anthony seemed to have developed a remarkable talent for avoiding most of the social functions of the house party. Gregory had seen him only twice, aside from their interview the night he arrived. Where is the scintillating Lord Bridgerton? He asked.
Oh, somewhere. I don't know. We'll find each other at the end of the day. That is all that matters.
Kate turned to him with a remarkably serene smile, annoyingly serene.
I must mingle, she said, smiling at him as if she hadn't a care in the world. Do enjoy yourself.
And she was off. Gregory hung back, making polite conversation with a few of the other guests as he surreptitiously watched Miss Watson. She was chatting with two young gentlemen, annoying sops the both of them, while Lady Lucinda stood politely to the side. And while Miss Watson did not appear to be flirting with either, she certainly was paying them more attention than he'd received that evening. And there was Lady Lucinda, smiling prettily, taking it all in. Gregory's eyes narrowed.
Had she double-crossed him?
She didn't seem the sort. But then again, their acquaintance was barely 24 hours old. How well did he know her, really? She could have an ulterior motive, and she might be a very fine actress with dark, mysterious secrets lying below the surface of a... Oh, blast it all. He was going mad. He would bet his last penny that Lady Lucinda could not lie to save her life.
She was sunny and open, and thus definitely not mysterious. She had meant well. Of that much he was certain. But her advice had been excremental. He caught her eye. A faint expression of apology seemed to flit across her face, and he thought she might have shrugged. Shrugged? What the hell did that mean? He took a step forward. Then he stopped. Then he thought about taking another step. No. Yes. No. Maybe. Damn it, he didn't know what to do. It was a singularly unpleasant sensation. He looked back at Lady Lucinda, quite certain that his expression was not one of sweetness and light. Really, this was all her fault. But of course now she wasn't looking at him. He did not shift his gaze. She turned back. Her eyes widened, hopefully with alarm. Good. Now they were getting somewhere. If he couldn't feel the bliss of Miss Watson's regard, then at least he could make Lady Lucinda feel the misery of his. Truly, there were times that just didn't call for maturity and tact. He remained at the edge of the room, finally beginning to enjoy himself. There was something perversely entertaining about imagining Lady Lucinda as a small, defenceless hare, not quite sure if and when she might meet her untimely end. Not, of course, that Gregory would ever assign himself the role of hunter. His piss-poor marksmanship guaranteed that he couldn't hit anything that moved, and it was a damn good thing he wasn't responsible for acquiring his own food. But he could imagine himself the fox. He smiled. His first real one of the evening. And then he knew that the fates were on his side, because he saw Lady Lucinda make her excuses and slip out the conservatory door, presumably to attend to her needs. As Gregory was standing on his own in the back corner, no one noticed when he exited the room through a different door. And when Lady Lucinda passed by the doorway to the library, he was able to yank her in without making a sound. Chapter 5, in which our hero and heroine have a most intriguing conversation. One moment Lucy was walking down the corridor, her nose scrunched in thought, as she tried to recall the location of the nearest washroom, and the next she was hurtling through air, or at the very least tripping over her feet, only to find herself bumping up against a decidedly large, decidedly warm, and decidedly human form. "Don't scream," came a voice, one she knew. "Mr. Bridgerton." Good heavens, this seemed out of character. Lucy wasn't quite certain if she ought to be scared. "We need to talk," he said, letting go of her arm. But he locked the door and pocketed the key. "Now?" Lucy asked, her eyes adjusting to the dim light, and she realized they were in the library. "Here?" And then a more pertinent question sprang to mind. "Alone?" He scowled. "I'm not going to ravish you, if that's what worries you." She felt her jaw clench. She hadn't thought he would, but he didn't need to make his honourable behaviour sound so much like an insult. "Well then, what is this about?" she demanded. "If I'm caught here in your company, there will be the devil to pay. I'm practically engaged, you know." "I know," he said, in that sort of tone, as if she'd informed him of it ad nauseam, when she knew for a fact she had not mentioned it more than once, or possibly twice. "Well, I am," she grumbled, just knowing that she would think of the perfect retort 2 hours later. "What," he demanded, "is going on?" "What do you mean?" she asked, even though she knew quite well what he was talking about. "Miss Watson," he ground out. "Hermione," as if there was another Miss Watson. But it did buy her a bit of time. "Your advice," he said, his gaze boring into hers, "was abysmal." He was correct, of course, but she'd been hoping he might not have noticed. "Right," she said, eyeing him warily as he crossed his arms. It wasn't the most welcoming of gestures, but she had to admit that he carried it off well. She'd heard that his reputation was one of joviality and fun, neither of which was presently in evidence. But, well, hell hath no fury and all that. She supposed one didn't need to be a woman to feel a tad bit underwhelmed at the prospect of unrequited love. And as she glanced hesitantly at his handsome face, it occurred to her that he probably didn't have much experience with unrequited love. Really, who would say no to this gentleman? Besides Hermione. But she said no to everyone.
He shouldn't take it personally.
"Lady Lucinda?" he drawled, waiting for a response.
"Of course," she stalled, wishing he didn't seem so very large in the closed room. "Right, right." He lifted a brow.
"Right?"
She swallowed. His tone was one of vaguely paternal indulgence, as if she were mildly amusing but not quite worthy of notice. She knew that tone well. It was a favourite of her older brothers, for use with younger sisters, and any friends they might bring home for school holidays. She hated that tone. But she ploughed on nonetheless and said, "I agree that my plan did not turn out to be the best course of action, but truthfully, I am not certain that anything else would have been an improvement." This did not appear to be what he wished to hear. She cleared her throat, twice, and then again. "I'm terribly sorry," she added, because she did feel badly, and it was her experience that apologies always worked when one wasn't quite certain what to say. "But I really did think—"
"You told me," he interrupted, "that if I ignored Miss Watson—"
"I didn't tell you to ignore her."
"You most certainly did."
"No, no, I did not. I told you to back away a bit, to try to be not quite so obvious in your besottedment."
It wasn't a word, but really Lucy couldn't be bothered. "Very well," he replied, and his tone shifted from slightly superior older brother to outright condescension. "If I wasn't meant to ignore her, just what precisely do you think I should have done?"
"Well,"
she scratched the back of her neck, which suddenly felt as if it were sprouting the most horrid of hives. Or maybe it was just nerves. She'd almost rather the hives. She didn't much like this queasy feeling growing in her stomach, as she tried to think of something reasonable to say. "Other than what I did, that is," he added.
"I'm not sure," she ground out. "I haven't oceans of experience with this sort of thing."
"Ah, now you tell me."
"Well, it was worth a try," she shot back. "Heaven knows you certainly weren't succeeding on your own."
His mouth clamped into a line, and she allowed herself a small, satisfied smile for hitting a nerve. She wasn't normally a mean-spirited person, but the occasion did seem to call for just a little bit of self-congratulation. "Very well," he said tightly, and while she would have preferred that he apologized and then said explicitly that she was right and he was wrong, she supposed that in some circles, "very well" might pass for an acknowledgement of error. And judging by his face, it was the most she was likely to receive. She nodded regally. It seemed the best course of action. Act like a queen, and maybe she would be treated like one. "Have you any other brilliant ideas?"
"Or not?"
"Well," she said, pretending that he actually sounded as if he cared about the answer, "I don't think it's so much a question of what to do as to why what you did didn't work." He blinked.
"No one has ever given up on Hermione," Lucy said with a touch of impatience. She hated when people did not understand her meaning immediately. "Her disinterest only makes them redouble their efforts. It's embarrassing, really."
He looked vaguely affronted. "I beg your pardon?"
"Oh, not you," Lucy said quickly.
"My relief is palpable." Lucy should have taken offence at his sarcasm, but his sense of humour was so like her own, she couldn't help but enjoy it.
"As I was saying," she continued, because she always did like to remain on the topic at hand, "no one ever seems to admit defeat and move on to a more attainable lady. Once everyone realizes that everyone else wants her, they seem to go mad. It's as if she's nothing but a prize to be won."
"Not to me," he said quietly. Her eyes snapped to his face, and she realized instantly that he meant that Hermione was more than a prize. He cared for her. He truly cared for her. Lucy wasn't sure why, or even how, as he had barely made her friend's acquaintance, and Hermione hadn't been terribly forthcoming in her conversations, not that she ever was, with the gentleman who pursued her. But Mr. Bridgerton cared for the woman inside, not just the perfect face. Or at least he thought he did. She nodded slowly, letting all this sink in. "I thought that perhaps if someone actually stopped dancing attendance on her, she might find it intriguing. Not," she hastened to assure him, "that Hermione sees all of this gentlemanly attention as her due. Quite to the contrary.
To be honest, for the most part, it's a nuisance.
Your flattery knows no bounds.
But he was smiling just a little bit, as he said it.
I've never been very skilled at flattery, she admitted. Apparently not.
She smiled wryly. He hadn't meant his words as an insult, and she wasn't going to take them as such. She will come around.
Do you think so?
I do. She'll have to. Hermione is a romantic, but she understands how the world works. Deep down she knows she cannot marry Mr. Edmonds. It simply cannot be done. Her parents will disown her, or at the very least they will threaten to, and she's not the sort to risk that.
If she really loves someone,
he said softly, she would risk anything. Lucy froze. There was something in his voice, something rough, something powerful. It shivered across her skin, raising goosebumps, leaving her strangely unable to move. And she had to ask. She had to know. Would you? She whispered. Would you risk anything? He didn't move, but his eyes burned, and he didn't hesitate. Anything. Her lips parted. With surprise? Or something else? Would you? He countered. I'm not sure. She shook her head, and she had the queerest feeling that she didn't quite know herself any longer. Because it ought to have been an easy question. It would have been just a few days ago. She would have said, of course not, and she would have said she was far too practical for that sort of nonsense. And most of all, she would have said that that sort of love did not exist anyway. But something had changed, and she didn't know what. Something had shifted within her, leaving her off balance, unsure. I don't know, she said again. I suppose it would depend.
On what?
And his voice grew even softer, impossibly soft, and yet she could make out every word. On...
She didn't know.
How could she not know what it would depend upon? She felt lost and rootless and then the words just came, slipped softly from her lips. On love, I suppose.
On love?
Yes. Good heavens. Had she ever had such a conversation? Did people actually talk about such things? And were there even any answers? Or was she the only person in the world who didn't understand? Something caught in her throat, and Lucy suddenly felt far too alone in her ignorance. He knew, and Hermione knew, and the poets claimed they did as well. It seemed she was the only lost soul, the only person who didn't understand what love was, who wasn't even sure it existed, or if it did, whether it existed for her. On how it felt, she finally said, because she didn't know what else to say. On how love felt. How it feels. His eyes met hers.
Do you think there is a variation?
She hadn't expected another question. She was still reeling from the last one.
How love feels, he clarified. Do you think it could possibly be different for different people? If you love someone truly and deeply, wouldn't it feel like everything?
She didn't know what to say. He turned and took a few steps toward the window.
It would consume you, he said. How could it not?
Lucy just stared at his back, mesmerized by the way his finely cut coat stretched across his shoulders. It was the strangest thing, but she couldn't seem to pull her gaze from the little spot where his hair touched his collar. She almost jumped when he turned around.
There would be no doubting it, he said, his voice low with the intensity of a true believer. You would simply know. It would feel like everything you had ever dreamed, and then it would feel like more.
He stepped toward her, once, then again, and then he said,
That, I think, is how love must feel.
And in that moment, Lucy knew that she was not destined to feel that way. If it existed, if love existed the way Gregory Bridgerton imagined it, it did not wait for her. She couldn't imagine such a maelstrom of emotion, and she would not enjoy it. That much she knew. She didn't want to feel lost to the whirlwind, at the mercy of something beyond her control. She didn't want misery, she didn't want despair, and if that meant she also had to forsake bliss and rapture, so be it. She lifted her eyes to his, made breathless by the gravity of her own revelations.
"It's too much," she heard herself say. "It would be too much. I wouldn't...
Slowly he shook his head.
"You would have no choice. It would be beyond your control. It just happens."
Her mouth parted with surprise.
"That's what she said."
"Who?"
And when she answered, her voice was strangely detached, as if the words were being drawn straight from her memory.
"Hermione," she said. "That's what Hermione said about Mr. Edmonds."
Gregory's lips tightened at the corners.
"Did she?"
Lucy slowly nodded.
"Almost precisely. She said it just happens. In an instant."
"She said that."
The words sounded like an echo, and indeed that was all he could do, whisper inane questions, looking for verification, hoping that maybe he had misheard, and that she would reply with something entirely different. But of course she did not. In fact, it was worse than he'd feared. She said,
"She was in the garden. That's what she said, just looking at the roses, and then she saw him. And she knew."
Gregory just stared at her. His chest felt hollow, his throat tight. This wasn't what he wanted to hear. Damn it, this was the one thing he didn't want to hear. She looked up at him then, and her eyes, grey in the dim light of the night, found his in an oddly intimate manner. It was as if he knew her, knew what she would say and how her face would look when she said it. It was strange and terrifying, and most of all, discomforting, because this wasn't the Honourable Miss Hermione Watson. This was Lady Lucinda Abernethy, and she was not the woman with whom he intended to spend the rest of his life. She was perfectly nice, perfectly intelligent, and certainly more than attractive, but Lucy Abernethy was not for him. And he almost laughed, because it all would have been so much easier if his heart had flipped the first time he saw her. She might be practically engaged, but she wasn't in love. Of that he was certain. "But Hermione Watson..."
"What did she say?"
he whispered, dreading the answer.
Lady Lucinda tilted her head to one side, and she looked nothing so much as puzzled. "She said that she didn't even see his face. Just the back of his head."
"Just the back of her neck."
"And then he turned, and she thought she heard music. And all she could think of was,
'I am wrecked.
I am ruined.' That is what she said to me."
She looked up at him, her head still tilting curiously to the side.
"Can you imagine? Ruined. Of all things." I couldn't quite grasp it.
But he could. He could.
Exactly.
He looked at Lady Lucinda, and he saw that she was watching his face. She looked puzzled still, and concerned, and just a little bit bewildered when she asked,
"Don't you find it odd?"
"Yes."
Just one word, but with his entire heart wrapped around it. Because it was strange. It cut like a knife. She wasn't supposed to feel that way about someone else. This wasn't the way it was supposed to happen. And then, as if a spell had been broken, Lady Lucinda turned and took a few steps to the right. She peered at the bookshelves, not that she could possibly make out any of the titles in this light, and then ran her fingers along the spines. Gregory watched her hand. He didn't know why. He just watched it as it moved. She was quite elegant, he realized. It wasn't noticeable at first, because her looks were so wholesome and traditional. One expected elegance to shimmer like silk, to glow, to transfix. Elegance was an orchid, not a simple daisy. But when Lady Lucinda moved, she looked different. She seemed to flow. She would be a good dancer. He was sure of it.
although he wasn't quite sure why that mattered.
"I'm sorry," she said, turning quite suddenly around.
"About Miss Watson?"
"Yes. I did not mean to hurt your feelings."
"You didn't," he said, perhaps a little too sharply.
"Oh," she blinked, perhaps with surprise. "I'm glad for that. I didn't mean to."
She wouldn't mean to, he realized. She wasn't the sort. Her lips parted, but she didn't speak right away. Her eyes seemed to focus beyond his shoulder, as if she were searching behind him for the correct words.
"It was just that, well, when you said what you said about love," she began, "it just sounded so familiar. I couldn't quite fathom it."
"Nor could I," he said softly.
She held silent, not quite looking at him. Her lips were pursed, just a touch, and every now and then she would blink. Not a fluttery sort of movement, but rather something quite deliberate. She was thinking, he realized. She was the sort who thought about things, probably to the never-ending frustration of anyone charged with the task of guiding her through life. "What will you do now?" she asked.
"About Miss Watson?"
She nodded.
"What do you suggest I do?"
"I am not sure," she said. "I can speak to her on your behalf, if you would like."
"No."
Something about that seemed far too juvenile, and Gregory was only just beginning to feel that he was truly a man, well and grown, ready to make his mark.
"You can wait, then," she said with a tiny shrug.
"Or you can proceed and try again to woo her. She won't have the opportunity to see Mr. Edmonds for at least a month, and I would think, eventually, she would come to see..."
But she didn't finish, and he wanted to know. "Come to see what?" he pressed.
She looked up as if pulled from a dream.
"Why, just that you are so much better than the rest. I don't know why she cannot see it. It's quite obvious to me."
From anyone else, it would have been a strange statement. Overly forward, perhaps. Maybe even a coy hint of availability. But not from her. She was, without artifice, the sort of girl a man could trust. Rather like his sisters, he supposed, with a keen wit and a sharp sense of humour. Lucy Abernathy would never inspire poetry, but she would make a very fine friend.
"It will happen," she said, her voice soft but certain. "She will realize. You and Hermione, you will be together, I am sure of it."
He watched her lips as she spoke. He didn't know why, but the shape of them was suddenly intriguing, the way they moved, formed their consonants and vowels. They were ordinary lips. Nothing about them had attracted his attention before, but now, in the darkened library, with nothing in the air but the soft whisper of their voices, he wondered what it would mean to kiss her. He stepped back, feeling suddenly and overwhelmingly wrong. "We should return," he said abruptly. A flicker of hurt passed over her eyes. Damn, he hadn't meant to sound like he was so eager to be rid of her. And none of this was her fault. He was just tired and frustrated. And she was there, and the night was dark, and they were alone. And it hadn't been desire. It couldn't be desire. He'd been waiting his entire life to react to a woman the way he had to Hermione Watson. He couldn't possibly feel desire for another woman after that. Not Lady Lucinda, not anyone. It was nothing. She was nothing. No, that was not fair. She was something. Quite a bit, actually, but not for him. Chapter 6, in which our hero makes progress.
Dear God, what had she said?
That single thought pounded through Lucy's mind as she lay in bed that night, too horrified even to toss and turn. She lay on her back, staring at the ceiling, utterly still, utterly mortified. And the next morning, as she peered in the mirror, sighing at the weary lavender colour beneath her eyes, There it was again. "Oh, Mr. Bridgerton, you are so much better than the rest."
And every time she relived it, the voice in her memory grew higher, more simpering, until she turned into one of those awful creatures, the girls who fluttered and swooned every time someone's older brother came to visit at school.
"Lucy Abernathy," she muttered under her breath, "you silly cow."
"Did you say something?"
Hermione looked up at her from a position near the bed. Lucy already had her hand on the doorknob, ready to leave for breakfast.
"Just doing sums in my head,"
Lucy lied. Hermione went back to putting on her shoes.
"For heaven's sake, why?"
she said, mostly to herself. Lucy shrugged. Even though Hermione was not looking at her, she always said that she was doing sums in her head when Hermione caught her talking to herself. She had no idea why Hermione believed her. Lucy detested sums, almost as much as she hated fractions and tables, but it seemed like the sort of thing she might do, practical as she was, and Hermione had never questioned it. Every now and then Lucy mumbled a number, just to make it more authentic.
"Are you ready to go down?"
Lucy asked, twisting the knob. Not that she was. The last thing she wished was to see, well, anyone. Mr. Bridgerton in particular, of course, but the thought of facing the world at large was just ghastly. But she was hungry, and she was going to have to show herself eventually, and she didn't see why her misery ought to wallow on an empty stomach. As they walked to breakfast, Hermione peered at her curiously.
"Are you well, Lucy?"
she asked.
"You look a little strange."
Lucy fought the urge to laugh. She was strange. She was an idiot, and probably shouldn't be let loose in public.
Good God! She had actually told Gregory Bridgerton that he was better than the rest.
She wanted to die, or at the very least, hide under a bed. But no, she couldn't even manage to feign illness and have a good lying in. It hadn't even occurred to her to try. She was so ridiculously normal and routinish that she was up and ready to depart for breakfast before she'd even managed a single coherent thought. Aside from the pondering of her apparent madness, of course. That she had no trouble focusing upon.
"Well, you look very fine anyway," Hermione said as they reached the top of the staircase. "I do like your choice of the green ribbon with the blue dress. I wouldn't have thought of it, but it's very smart, and so lovely with your eyes."
Lucy looked down at her clothing. She had no recollection of dressing herself. It was a miracle she did not look as if she had escaped from a gypsy circus. Although, she let out a little sigh. Running off with the gypsies sounded rather appealing just then, practical even, since she was quite certain she ought never to show her face in polite society again. Clearly, she was missing an extremely important connecting vessel between her brain and her mouth, and heaven only knew what might emerge from her lips next. Good gracious! She might as well have told Gregory Bridgerton that she thought him a god, which she did not, not at all. She merely thought him a rather fine catch for Hermione, and she told him so, hadn't she? What had she said? Precisely, what had she said?
Lucy!
What she said was... What she said was... She stopped cold.
Dear God! He was going to think she wanted him.
Hermione walked another few paces before she realized Lucy was no longer in step beside her.
Lucy! Do you know,
Lucy said, her voice coming out just a little bit squeaky,
I don't believe I'm hungry after all.
Hermione looked incredulous.
For breakfast?
It was a bit far-fetched. Lucy always ate like a sailor at breakfast.
I think something did not quite agree with me last night. Perhaps the salmon.
She put her hand on her belly for added effect.
I think I should lie down.
And never get up.
You do look a bit green, Hermione said.
Lucy smiled wanly, making a conscious decision to be thankful for small favours.
Would you like me to bring you something?
Hermione asked.
Yes,
Lucy said fervently, hoping Hermione hadn't heard the rumble of her stomach.
Oh, but I shouldn't,
Hermione said, placing one thoughtful finger to her lips.
You probably shouldn't eat if you're feeling queasy. The last thing you want is to bring it all up again. It's not queasiness, exactly, Lucy improvised.
It's not?
It's, rather difficult to explain, actually. Lucy sagged against the wall. Who knew she had it in her to be such a fine actress? Hermione rushed to her side, concern knitting her brow.
Oh, dear, she said, supporting Lucy with an arm around her back. You look ghastly.
Lucy blinked. Maybe she was taking ill. Even better. That would keep her sequestered for days.
I'm returning you to bed, Hermione said, her tone brooking no argument. And then I will summon Mother. She will know what to do.
Lucy nodded with relief. Lady Watson's remedy for any sort of ailment was chocolate and biscuits. Unorthodox, to be sure, but as it was what Hermione's mother chose whenever she claimed to be ill, she couldn't very well deny it to anyone else. Hermione guided her back to their bedchamber, even going so far as to remove Lucy's slippers for her before she lay atop the bed.
"If I didn't know you so well," Hermione said, tossing the slippers carelessly into the armoire, "I would think you were faking."
"I would never."
"Oh, you would," Hermione said. "You absolutely would. But you could never carry it off. You're far too traditional."
"Traditional? What had that to do with anything?"
Hermione let out a little huff of air. "I'm probably going to have to sit with that wearisome Mr. Bridgerton at breakfast now."
"He's not so dreadful," Lucy said, with perhaps a bit more verve than one might expect from someone with a belly full of bad salmon.
"I suppose not," Hermione acceded. "He's better than most, I dare say."
Lucy winced at the echo of her own words.
"So much better than the rest. So much better than the rest."
It was, quite possibly, the most appalling thing ever to cross her lips.
"But he is not for me," Hermione continued, oblivious to Lucy's distress. "He will realize it soon enough. Then he'll move on to someone else."
Lucy doubted that, but she didn't say anything.
What a coil. Hermione was in love with Mr. Edmonds, Mr. Bridgerton was in love with Hermione,
and Lucy was not in love with Mr. Bridgerton.
But he thought she was. Which was nonsense, of course. She would never allow that to happen, practically engaged as she was to Lord Hazelby.
Hazelby. She nearly groaned. This would all be so much easier if she could remember his face.
"Perhaps I'll ring for breakfast," Hermione said, her face lighting up as if she'd just discovered a new continent. "Do you think they'll send up a tray?"
Oh, blast. There went all her plans. Now Hermione had an excuse to remain in their chamber all day, and the next too, if Lucy continued to feign illness.
"I don't know why I didn't think of it sooner," Hermione said, heading to the bell pool. "I would much rather remain here with you."
"Don't," Lucy called out, her brain spinning madly.
"Why not?"
"Indeed."
Lucy thought quickly. "If you have them bring a tray, you might not get what you want." "But I know what I want. Coddled eggs and toast. Surely they can manage that."
"But I don't want coddled eggs and toast." Lucy tried to keep her expression as pitiful and pathetic as she could manage.
"You know my taste so well. If you go to the breakfast room, I'm sure you would find something exactly right." "But I thought you weren't going to eat."
Lucy put her hand back on her belly.
"Well, I might want to eat a little." "Oh, very well,"
Hermione said, by now sounding more impatient than anything else.
"What do you want?"
Perhaps some bacon?
With a fishy stomach? Oh, I'm not sure it was the fish."
For the longest moment, Hermione just stood there and stared at her.
"Just bacon, then?" she finally asked. And anything else you think I might enjoy?"
Lucy said, since it would have been easy enough to ring for bacon. Hermione let out a pent-up breath.
"I shall return soon."
She regarded Lucy with a slightly suspicious expression.
"Don't overexert yourself."
I won't," Lucy promised. She smiled at the door as it closed behind Hermione. She counted to 10, then hopped out of bed and ran to the wardrobe to straighten her slippers. Once that was done to her satisfaction, she snatched up a book and crawled back in to settle down and read. All in all, it was turning out to be a lovely morning. By the time Gregory entered the breakfast room, he was feeling much better. What had happened the night before? It was nothing. practically forgotten. It wasn't as if he wanted to kiss Lady Lucinda. He'd merely wondered about it, which was worlds apart. He was just a man, after all. He'd wondered about hundreds of women, most of the time without any intention even of speaking to them. Everybody wondered. It was whether one acted upon it that made the difference. What was that his brothers, his happily married brothers, he might add, had once said? Marriage didn't render them blind. They might not be looking for other women, but that didn't mean they didn't notice what was standing right in front of them. Whether it was a barmaid with extremely large bosoms, or a proper young lady with, well, a pair of lips, one couldn't very well not see the body part in question. And if one saw, then, of course, one would wonder, and nothing. It all added up to nothing, which meant Gregory could eat his breakfast with a clear head. Eggs were good for the soul, he decided. Bacon, too. The only other occupant in the breakfast room was the 50-ish and perpetually starchy Mr. Snow, who was thankfully more interested in his newspaper than in conversation. After the obligatory grunts of greeting, Gregory sat down at the opposite end of the table and began to eat. Excellent sausage this morning, and the toast was exceptional as well, just the right amount of butter. A bit of salt needed for the eggs, but other than that, they were rather tasty. He tried the salted cod. Not bad. Not bad at all. He took another bite, chewed, enjoyed himself, thought very deep thoughts about politics and agriculture, moved on determinedly to Newtonian physics. He really should have paid more attention at Eton, because he couldn't quite recall the difference between force and work. Let's see, work was that bit with the foot-pounds, and force was... He wasn't even really wondering. Honestly, it could all be blamed on the trick of the light, and his mood. He'd been feeling a bit off. He'd been looking at her mouth, because she'd been talking, for heaven's sake. Where else was he meant to look? He picked up his fork with renewed vigour. Back to the cod, and his tea. Nothing washed everything away like tea. He took a long sip, peering over the edge of his cup, as he heard someone coming down the hall. And then she filled the doorway. He blinked with surprise, then glanced over her shoulder. She'd come without her extra appendage. Now that he thought about it, he didn't think he'd ever seen Miss Watson without Lady Lucinda. "Good morning," he called out, in precisely the right tone. Friendly enough so as not to sound bored, but not too friendly. A man never wanted to sound desperate. Miss Watson looked over at him as he stood, and her face registered absolutely no emotion whatsoever. Not happiness, not ire, nothing but the barest flicker of acknowledgement. It was quite remarkable, really. "Good morning," she murmured. "Then hell, why not? Will you join me?" he asked. Her lips parted, and she paused, as if not quite sure what she wished to do, and then, as if to offer perverse proof that they did in fact share some sort of higher connection, he read her mind. Truly, he knew exactly what she was thinking. "Oh, very well. I suppose I have to eat breakfast anyway." It positively warmed the soul. "I cannot stay very long," Miss Watson said. "Lucy is unwell, and I promised to bring her a tray." It was difficult to imagine the indomitable Lady Lucinda taking ill, although Gregory didn't know why. It wasn't as if he knew her. Really, it had been nothing but a few conversations, if that. "I trust it's nothing serious," he murmured.
"I don't think so," she replied, taking a plate.
She looked up at him, blinking those astounding green eyes.
"Did you eat the fish?"
He looked down at his cod.
"No." "No, last night."
"I imagine so. I usually eat everything." Her lips pursed for a moment, then she murmured,
"I ate it as well."
Gregory waited for further explanation, but she didn't seem inclined to offer any. So instead he remained on his feet as she placed delicate portions of egg and ham on her plate. Then, after a moment's deliberation,
"Am I really hungry? Because the more food I put on my plate, the longer it will take to consume it. Here, in the breakfast room. With him."
She took a piece of toast.
Yes, I'm hungry."
Gregory waited until she took a seat across from him, and he sat down. Miss Watson offered him a small smile, the sort that was really nothing more than a shrug of the lips, and proceeded to eat her eggs. "Did you sleep well?" Gregory asked. She dabbed at her mouth with her serviette.
"Very well, thank you."
"I did not," he announced. Hell, if polite conversation failed to draw her out, perhaps he ought to opt for surprise. She looked up.
"I'm so sorry."
And then she looked back down and ate.
"A terrible dream," he said. "Nightmare, really. Ghastly."
She picked up a knife and cut her bacon.
"I'm so sorry," she said,
seemingly unaware that she'd uttered those very same words mere moments earlier.
"I can't quite recall what it was," Gregory mused.
He was making it up, of course. He hadn't slept well, but not because of a nightmare. But he was going to get her to talk to him or die trying.
"Do you remember your dreams?" he asked.
Her fork stopped midway to her mouth, and there was that delightful connection of the minds again.
"In God's name, why is he asking me this?"
Well, maybe not in God's name. That would require a bit more emotion than she seemed to possess. At least with him.
No, she said. Not usually.
Really? How intriguing. I recall mine about half of the time, I would estimate.
She nodded.
If I nod, I won't have to come up with something to say.
He ploughed on.
My dream from last night was quite vivid. There was a rainstorm, thunder and lightning. Very dramatic.
She turned her neck ever so slowly and looked over her shoulder.
Miss Watson?
She turned back.
I thought I heard someone. I hoped I heard someone.
Really, this mind-reading talent was beginning to grow tedious. All right, he said. Well, where was I? Miss Watson began to eat very quickly. Gregory leaned forward. She wasn't going to escape so easily.
Oh, yes, the rain, he said. It was pouring, absolute deluge. And the ground began to melt beneath my feet, drag me down.
He paused purposefully and then kept his eyes on her face until she was forced to say something. After a few moments of exceedingly awkward silence, she finally moved her gaze from her food to his face. A small piece of egg trembled on the edge of her fork.
The ground was melting, he said,
and almost laughed.
How unpleasant.
It was, he said with great animation. I thought it would swallow me whole. Have you ever felt like that, Miss Watson?
Silence. And then,
no. No, I can't say that I have.
He idly fingered his earlobe and then said quite offhandedly,
I didn't much like it.
He thought she might spit her tea.
Well, really, he continued. Who would?
And for the first time since he'd met her, he thought he saw the disinterested mask slip from her eyes as she said, with quite a bit of feeling,
I have no idea.
She even shook her head. Three things at once. A complete sentence, a spot of emotion, and a shake of the head. By George, he might be getting through to her.
What happened next, Mr. Bridgerton?
Good God! She'd asked him a question. He might tumble from his chair.
Actually, he said, I woke up.
That's fortunate.
I thought so as well. They say if you die in your dreams, you die in your sleep.
Her eyes widened.
They do?
They being my brothers, he admitted. You may feel free to assess the information based upon its source.
I have a brother, she said. He delights in tormenting me.
Gregory offered her a grave nod.
Well, that is what brothers are meant to do.
Do you torment your sisters?
Mostly just the younger one.
Because she's smaller?
No, because she deserves it.
She laughed.
Mr. Bridgerton, you're terrible.
He smiled slowly.
You haven't met Hyacinth.
If she bothers you enough to make you wish to torment her, I'm sure I would adore her.
He sat back, enjoying this feeling of ease. It was nice not to have to work so hard.
Your brother is your elder, then?
She nodded.
He does torment me because I'm smaller.
You mean you don't deserve it?
Of course not.
He couldn't quite tell if she was being facetious.
Where is your brother now?
Trinity Hall.
She took the last bite of her eggs.
Cambridge. Lucy's brother was there as well. He has been graduated for a year.
Gregory wasn't quite certain why she was telling him this. He wasn't interested in Lucinda Abernathy's brother. Miss Watson cut another small piece of bacon and lifted her fork to her mouth. Gregory ate as well, stealing glances at her as he chewed. Lord, but she was lovely. He didn't think he'd ever seen another woman with her colouring. It was the skin, really. He imagined that most men thought her beauty came from her hair and eyes, and it was true that those were the features that initially stopped a man cold. But her skin was like alabaster laid over a rose petal. He paused mid-chew. He had no idea he could be so poetic. Miss Watson set down her fork.
"Well," she said with the tiniest of sighs, "I suppose I should prepare that plate for Lucy."
He stood immediately to assist her. Good heavens, but she actually sounded as if she didn't wish to leave. Gregory congratulated himself on an extremely productive breakfast. "I shall find someone to carry it back for you," he said, signalling to a footman.
"Oh, that would be lovely."
She smiled gratefully at him, and his heart quite literally skipped a beat. He thought it was merely a figure of speech, but now he knew it was true. Love really could affect one's internal organs. "Please do offer Lady Lucinda my well wishes," he said, watching curiously as Miss Watson heaped 5 slices of meat on the plate.
"Lucy likes bacon," she said.
"I see that." And then she proceeded to spoon eggs, cod, potatoes, tomatoes, and then on a separate plate, muffins and toast.
"Breakfast has always been her favourite meal," Miss Watson said.
"Mine as well."
"I shall tell her that."
"I can't imagine that she'll be interested."
A maid had entered the room with a tray, and Miss Watson placed the heaping plates upon it.
"Oh, she will," she said breezily. "Lucy is interested in everything. She does sums in her head, even. For entertainment."
"You're joking." Gregory couldn't imagine a less pleasant way to keep oneself occupied. She placed her hand on her heart.
"I swear it to you. I think she must be trying to improve her mind, because she was never very good at maths."
She walked to the door, then turned to face him.
"Breakfast was lovely, Mr. Bridgerton. Thank you for the company and the conversation."
He inclined his head. "The pleasure was all mine, except that it wasn't. She had enjoyed their time together, too." He could see it in her smile and her eyes, and he felt like a king.
"Did you know that if you die in your dreams, you die in your sleep?"
Lucy didn't even pause in her cutting of her bacon.
"Nonsense," she said. "Who told you that?"
Hermione perched on the edge of the bed.
"Mr. Bridgerton?"
Now that rated above bacon.
Lucy looked up immediately.
"Then you saw him at breakfast?"
Hermione nodded.
"We sat across from each other. He helped me to arrange for the tray."
Lucy regarded her massive breakfast with dismay. Usually she managed to hide her ferocious appetite by dallying at the breakfast table, then getting another serving once the first wave of guests had departed. Oh well, nothing to do about it. Gregory Bridgerton already thought her a widgeon. He might as well think her a widgeon who would weigh 12 stone by the year's end.
"He's rather amusing, actually,"
Hermione said, absently twirling her hair.
"I've heard he's quite charming."
Lucy watched her friend closely. Hermione was gazing out the window, and if she didn't quite have that ridiculous memorizing a love sonnet look to her, she had at least worked her way up to a couplet or two.
"He's extremely handsome," Lucy said. There seemed no harm in confessing it. It wasn't as if she was planning to set her cap for him, and his looks were fine enough that it could be interpreted as a statement of fact rather than opinion.
"Do you think so?"
Hermione asked. She turned back to Lucy, her head tilting thoughtfully to the side.
"Oh, yes," Lucy replied. "His eyes particularly. I'm quite partial to hazel eyes. I always have been."
Actually, she'd never considered it one way or the other, but now that she thought about it, hazel eyes were rather fine. Bit of brown, bit of green. Best of both worlds. Hermione looked at her curiously.
"I didn't know that."
Lucy shrugged. "I don't tell you everything." Another lie. Hermione was privy to every boring detail of Lucy's life, and had been for 3 years.
except, of course, for her plans to match Hermione with Mr. Bridgerton.
Mr. Bridgerton, right. Must return the conversation to the subject of him.
But you must agree, Lucy said in her most pondering of voices, he's not too handsome. It's a good thing, really.
Mr. Bridgerton?
Yes.
Well, his nose has a great deal of character, wouldn't you say?
And his eyebrows aren't quite even.
Lucy frowned. She hadn't realized she was quite so familiar with Gregory Bridgerton's face.
Hermione did nothing but nod, so Lucy continued with, I don't think I should want to be married to someone who was too handsome. It must be terribly intimidating. I would feel like a duck every time I opened my mouth.
Hermione giggled at that.
A duck?
Lucy nodded and decided not to quack. She wondered if the men who courted Hermione worried about the same thing.
He's quite dark, Hermione said.
Well, not so dark. Lucy thought his hair a medium brown.
Yes, but Mr. Edmonds is so fair.
Mr. Edmonds did have lovely blonde hair, so Lucy decided not to comment. And she knew she had to be very careful at this point. If she pushed Hermione too hard in Mr. Bridgerton's direction, Hermione would surely balk and go right back to being in love with Mr. Edmonds, which, of course, was utter disaster. No, Lucy was going to need to be subtle. If Hermione was going to switch her devotion to Mr. Bridgerton, she was going to have to figure it out for herself, or think she did.
And his family is very smart, Hermione murmured.
And Mr. Edmonds? Lucy asked, deliberately misinterpreting.
No, Mr. Bridgerton's, of course. I've heard such interesting things about them.
Oh, yes, Lucy said.
I have as well. I rather admire Lady Bridgerton. She's been a marvellous hostess.
Hermione nodded her agreement.
I think she prefers you to me.
Don't be silly.
I don't mind, Hermione said with a shrug. It's not as if she doesn't like me. She just likes you better.
Women always like you better. Lucy opened her mouth to contradict, but then stopped, realizing that it was true. How odd that she had never noticed it.
Well, it's not as if you'd be marrying her, she said.
Hermione looked at her sharply.
I didn't say I wished to marry Mr. Bridgerton.
No, of course not, Lucy said, mentally kicking herself. She'd known the words were a mistake the minute they'd escaped her mouth.
But,
Hermione sighed and proceeded to stare off into space. Lucy leaned forward. So this was what it meant to hang on a word, and she hung and she hung until she could bear it no longer.
Hermione? She finally queried.
Hermione flopped back onto the bed.
Oh, Lucy,
she moaned in tones worthy of Covent Garden.
I'm so confused.
Confused? Lucy smiled. This had to be a good thing.
Yes,
Hermione replied from her decidedly inelegant position atop the bed.
When I was sitting at the table with Mr. Bridgerton, well, actually, at first I thought him quite mad, but then I realized I was enjoying myself. He was funny, actually, and made me laugh.
Lucy did not speak, waiting for Hermione to gather the rest of her thoughts. Hermione made a little noise, half sigh, half moan, wholly distressed.
And then once I realized that, I looked up at him and I...
She rolled onto her side, leaning on her elbow and propping her head up with one hand.
I fluttered.
Lucy was still trying to digest the mad comment.
Fluttered,
she echoed.
What is fluttered? My stomach, my heart, my something. I don't know what.
Similar to when you saw Mr. Edmonds for the first time?
No, no, no.
Each no was said with a different emphasis, and Lucy had the distinct sense that Hermione was trying to convince herself of it.
It wasn't the same at all, Hermione said, but it was a little bit the same, on a much smaller scale.
I see, Lucy said with an admirable amount of gravity, considering that she didn't understand at all. But then again, she never understood this sort of thing, and after her strange conversation with Mr. Bridgerton the night before, she was quite convinced she never would.
But
Wouldn't you think, if I'm so desperately in love with Mr. Edmonds, wouldn't you think I would never flatter with anyone else?
Lucy thought about that, and then she said, I don't see why love has to be desperate.
Hermione pushed herself up on her elbows and looked at her curiously.
That wasn't my question.
It wasn't? Oughtn't it have been?
Well, Lucy said, choosing her words carefully, perhaps it means...
I know what you're going to say, Hermione cut in. You're going to say that it probably means I'm not as in love with Mr. Edmonds as I thought. And then you will say that I need to give Mr. Bridgerton a chance. And then you'll tell me that I ought to give all of the other gentlemen a chance.
Well, not all of them, Lucy said, but the rest of it was rather close.
Don't you think this has all occurred to me? Don't you realize how terribly distressing all of this is, to doubt myself so? And good heavens, Lucy, what if this is not the end of it? What if this happens again, with someone else?
Lucy rather suspected she was not meant to answer, but still she spoke.
There's nothing wrong with doubting yourself, Hermione. Marriage is an enormous undertaking, the biggest choice you will ever make in your life. Once it's done, you can't change your mind.
Lucy took a bite of her bacon, reminding herself how grateful she was that Lord Hazelby was so suitable. Her situation could have been ever so much worse. She chewed, swallowed, and said,
You need only to give yourself a bit of time, Hermione,
and you should. There is never any good reason to rush into marriage. There was a long pause before Hermione answered.
I reckon you're right.
If you are truly meant to be with Mr. Edmonds, he will wait for you. Oh, heavens, Lucy couldn't believe she'd just said that. Hermione jumped from the bed just so that she could rush to Lucy's side and envelop her in a hug.
Oh, Lucy, that was the sweetest thing you've ever said to me. I know you don't approve of him.
Well, Lucy cleared her throat, trying to think of an acceptable reply, something that would make her feel not quite so guilty for not having meant it.
It's not that...
A knock sounded at the door.
Oh, thank goodness.
Enter, the two girls called out in unison. A maid came in and bobbed a quick curtsy.
M'lady, she said, looking at Lucy, Lord Fensworth has arrived to see you.
Lucy gaped at her.
My brother? He's waiting in the rose salon, m'lady. Shall I tell him you'll be right down?
Yes, of course.
Will there be anything else?
Lucy slowly shook her head.
No, thank you. That will be all.
The maid departed, leaving Lucy and Hermione staring at each other in shock.
Why do you think Richard is here?
Hermione asked, her eyes wide with interest. She had met Lucy's brother on a number of occasions, and they'd always got on well.
I don't know.
Lucy quickly climbed out of bed, all thoughts of feigning an upset stomach forgotten.
I hope nothing is amiss.
Hermione nodded and followed her to the wardrobe.
Has your uncle been unwell?
Not that I've been made aware. Lucy fished out her slippers and sat on the edge of the bed to put them back on her feet.
I had best get down to see him. If he's here, it is something important.
Hermione regarded her for a moment, then asked,
Would you like for me to accompany you? I shan't intrude upon your conversation, of course, but I will walk down with you if you like.
Lucy nodded, and together they departed for the Rose Salon. Chapter 7, in which our unexpected guest delivers distressing news. Gregory had been chatting with his sister-in-law in the breakfast room when the butler informed her of their unexpected guest, and so naturally he decided to accompany her to the Rose Salon to greet Lord Fensworth, elder brother to Lady Lucinda. He had nothing better to do, and it somehow seemed he ought to go and meet the young earl, given that Miss Watson had been chatting on about him a quarter of an hour earlier. Gregory knew him only by reputation. The 4 years' difference in their ages had ensured that they had not crossed paths at university, and Fensworth had not yet chosen to take his place in London society. Gregory had been expecting a studious, bookish sort. He'd heard that Fensworth had elected to remain at Cambridge even when school was not in session. Indeed, the gentleman waiting by the window in the Rose Salon did possess a certain gravitas that made him seem slightly older than his years. But Lord Fensworth was also tall, fit, and although perhaps a touch shy,
He carried himself with an air of self-possession that came from something more primal than a title of nobility. Lady Lucinda's brother knew who he was, not just what he was born to be called. Gregory liked him immediately. Until it became obvious that